Dr. Rock's Radio Show on autonomousmedia.net. Alternative views, alternative tunes. Thursday nights at 9.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's Radio Show here on autonomousmedia.net. We've got a very exciting story for you tonight coming from Ray and Paul Cotty, who are going to tell us a story with, it's got courtroom drama, it's got time behind bars, it's got men with guns, it's got absolutely everything. I'm going to play another tune before we get the gentlemen in. They've joined us in the chat box. I see they're obviously popular. There's a fair few people in there already. But we've also got what looks like a lot of people hanging around in the lobby. Now, we know that some people like to be out there because they admire all the potted plants and all the work we've done with the internal decor and the pictures and all that. But if you'd really like to come and join us actually in the chat, because I can see there's, an extra 10 of you out there, then if you look at the screen in front of you, there's a little green tab which says AM chat on it. And if you click on that, it should reveal a list of names, people that are already in there and various guests and stuff. And at the top, it says chats, friends and recent. And if you look at the top, at the top of the list, there's a thing which says AM chat. And if you click on that, you'll be able to come in and join the rest of us. And the seating's much more comfortable in here, softer lighting and stuff to make it easier on the eye and all of that. Also, I'm aware there's some people who are puzzled by the fact that they're spontaneously turning up with a guest number when they think they should have an ID and stuff. If you're in that position, you might try logging out and then logging back in again with whatever details you proffered when you first arrived. And hopefully you will pop up with whatever avatar it was you had back in hand. In the meantime, I'm going to play one more tune, another 5 minutes of music. Then we'll come back with Paul and Ray and see if we can't pick the bones out of that one. Thanks for being there, folks. Catatonia and Road Rage there. Well, I'm very happy to say that we seem to have been technically and successfully joined with Ray Hall and Paul Cotty. Hiya, Ray. Hiya, Paul.
Hi, Doug.
Doc, how's things?
Thanks very much for joining us on Dr. Rock's Radio Show. We tried to get this one together a couple of weeks ago, but it didn't kind of work. So I'm really excited to hear how it's all going. And I know, Paul, that you want to kick off by taking us back to where all of the action started, don't you?
Well, I'm actually going to let Ray kick off on that part, and then I'll come in. Ray's going to tell how it all kicked off there. Would it be just over a year, Ray, now, a year and a half ago, yeah?
Oh, right, yeah. Well,
back to trim.
Sorry?
We go back to trim, back to the beginning, and what happened and what we done.
Yeah, we go back to the beginning, I suppose. On the 16th of July in 15 now or 16? I think it was 15. Yeah, 2015. I was in Trim Courthouse, and I was defending a possession order on my dwelling. And Paul had come along to help me that day. And in the process of the court case, I was using the official offer in the court case, and I actually think I was winning, yeah? And because the solicitor the barrister was under all sorts of pressure with the question, right, that he couldn't answer was, basically I was asking him if he was refusing my offer. And I'd asked him twice already, and now I was making a statement that I'd heard him rejecting, and that he was, but that wasn't refusing, was it? And with that then, there was a hullabaloo behind me in the court. I'm standing up at the top, and there was a hullabaloo behind me, and I turned around to see and hear Paul saying to some man in a blue dressed in a blue shirt and a navy trousers, "Who are you?" And that's private. And with that, then I seen him being accosted by three men then dressed in blue shorts with navy trousers. And
under what pretense were they having a go? Why did they choose to?
None was given.
Right.
Right, and none was given, and at this stage now, the judge had fled off the bench, right, so she'd abandoned her ship, yeah? I was left standing in a courtroom, and nobody knew what was going on, and Paul was after being, the man who had come here to help me in the court case, who had all my belongings and everything while I was standing up there, was now being dragged out of the court, and down the stairs on the far side. We stood there in the court for about 45 minutes, and the judge came back in, and she decided she had a matter to deal with. and they brought back up Paul. And he was barefoot. He was naked from the waist up, and he was bleeding from the face, where he looked like he got a few scalps, yeah? But he went to walk out, as us being us, like, he went to walk out, and the judge bellowed over, "Hey, you, sit down." And at that point, Paul turned around to her and says, "Are you addressing me? And I'll pass it over to Paul, because he can better say it better than I can at this point."
Right, well, I'll bring it back into... Jesus, a bit of feedback there. Sorry, folks. I'll bring it back to the part where I was sitting down. Ray was after coming down to me and asked me for a piece of his paperwork that I was holding on to. And I had my own private belongings sitting on top of the paperwork. A stranger approached me while I was sitting down. And he pointed at the belongings and says, "Give me that." Now, that could be anything. And I just turned around and I says, "Private, who are you?" Again, he repeated to me, "Give me that." And I says, "Private, who are you?" So he went in to grab the private belongings, and I held on to them tightly. And before I knew it, there was, as Ray said, there was three of them. I didn't know many at the time because the arms were twisted up behind my back, and I was in a headlock. And all I kept asking them was, "Who are yous?" I didn't shout, roar, or anything like that. There was no abusive behaviour. The only thing I want to know at this stage is, who are yous? There was a packed court that day, and like, look, it doesn't matter what part of the world you're in, when something like that happens, a packed court is going to react. They did react that day, and they were very upset. It's not something that I'm into myself when courts react, and I'll explain the reason why there as well. One day I reacted and all this roaring and shouting. It's not something that I do because I'm too busy asking these people, "Who are you?" Now, whereas those man or woman that was in the court that day just sat and listened and listened to what I'm saying when I'm asking, "Who are you?" Now they've witnessed me asking these strangers, "Who yous are?" So, Randy, it's all got to do with learning curve. So did you have me arms twisted up behind my back and headlocked and bent over? And he brought me round the court and down the stairs. When he brought me down the stairs, they put me into a cell down there. So they did. I won't go into certain details on what happened down there for certain reasons that I can't at this stage.
Yeah.
But I was put in the cell down there, so it was, let's say, I neither assisted or resisted when I was being brought down there. And I made that quite clear, so I did. I'm neither assisting or resisting. But before he brought me out of the court, I did turn around and I went, "Shh." So the crowd in there would calm down. Now, I didn't say it loudly, a few people, I just went, "Shh." And someone said, made a statement about that guard or that prison officer, whichever it was, shouldn't have his hands around that man. And with that, because someone gave acknowledgement of a guard or a police, now I can't see who they are because of the way my head's twisted up, I just made it clear, I accept and acknowledge your oath of office and I hold you to that office. Now, as long as I say that and I know that I've done it and I stand in truth the whole time in everything I do, this is the main thing we have to learn, is stand in truth and honour and ask the right things, never comply with them. And he brought down the stairs, put in a room. When I came out of that room, when that door was... I was in that room, sorry, I'll just go through a few things. When I was in the room sitting down, a few times the little hatch opened and they look in and they go, "Who are you?" And I just turn around and respond, "Who are you?" Or they might say, "What's your name?" And I just go, "Who are you?" And every time they'd piss off, so they'd shut the hatch and piss off. At one stage then a fella came along and he opened the door. He opened the door, a little old man, blue short and bullshit, opened the door on me. He looked in and he opens the door and he goes, "Who are you?" He goes, "What's your name?" And I went, "Who are you?" He said he was, I don't know what he said, he was a guard or so-and-so or sergeant so-and-so at the time. I turned around, I accept and acknowledge you're out of office and I hold you to that office. Get what I actually said after that, so I'm not going to start lying or anything. But anyway, I did turn around and I said to him, have your pen and paper? He was asking me about names and stuff. I said, have your pen and paper? Now, there was another guard standing behind him at this stage. Before he came into the cell, the first thing they done was put on a light. The cell that they thrown me into, the, I don't know if anybody's ever been in cells before, the main light was switched off, and they usually have a little blue light or a red light on. Well, what they had in the cell I was in was the light was flashing. So you can imagine like a strobe light, a red strobe light or something fucking flashing in your head for about 40 minutes. And then these lads are coming near you and all that. So anyway.
That sounds like cool and unusual treatment to me.
I found it very, very, well, you see, it's when they came in that door, before that, I was thinking, what's the red light and all that? I thought it was just a busted light. But when they came in, they were cute enough to switch on a different light and didn't have a bloody strobe. And when they were leaving, they switched it off and left this little yoke strobing, you know what I mean? And, but anyway, the sergeant, or the fella behind him, went off and got a piece of paper. He came back and gave it to this so-called guard. You see, he's only a so-called guard as well. And he comes over beside me and he goes, I'm sure I would have remembered it. And I went, I'm sure you would have. But you can leave the pen and paper there if you like. And he looked at me and he fucked off, sweetie. Sorry for the language. He just looked at me and he was gone then, so he was. I just thought, I can leave that pen and paper there if you like. I only asked him for a pen and paper. I didn't say what I was doing with it. But so he was gone with the pen and paper and everything else. He shut the door on me down. I think it was well after that the door opened again. They stood at the door and I jumped up and I went, they stood at the door and he says, come on you, or something like that. Now, when they say that, I know that I knew in my head, come on you, they're going to bring me upstairs. As soon as they said that, I went, oh, I'm free to go, is it? And he looked at me. And I got up and I went to walk out of the cell door, you know, all on my way, yeah, type thing. And he goes, no, you have to go up in the court. So I'm neither assisting or resisting, and who I use is what I turn around to them. So either side, they sort of underneath my arm and led me up into the court. At this stage,
it's just quite clear, isn't it, from all of this, that they know, they really do understand that they're playing the name game and that they actually specifically need you to say your name for their own reasons, and when you're not doing that, they're going away. It's quite clear from this behaviour that they know that game, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Everything's got to do with consent and contracting, jurisdiction. That's why I'm going to try and lay it out a little bit here now.
Just to look into that a little bit. So what was going on with the pen and paper? You basically asked for some pen and paper. He brought it in, but you failed to behave in such a way as to have it left with you. So he was after contracting with you even over the pen and the paper, was he?
Yeah, I contracted him as a guard. I asked him for pen and paper and he got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was contracting him with a guard. But when he came back with the pen and paper, I wanted the pen and paper for my own reasons, not for his.
Yeah,
and that's why I said, when he came back and he said, well, I said, well, you may leave it there if you wish. But he wasn't having that and he was gone. it's all got to do with the consent and the contract and recognition, even giving recognition. Just because he's in a dressed up as if he's a guard or as if he's a policeman or a court clerk doesn't mean he is until they say they are.
And
you know, and when they say they are, then you hold them to their office.
Yeah, and what exactly are you doing now? When you acknowledge their oath of office and say you're going to hold them to it, just exactly what's going on there?
That's me contracting them.
Into their role as somebody that's there basically to serve and protect.
Absolutely. Now, beyond in England, I wouldn't be contracting the policeman. I'd be looking for the police constable. Wouldn't that be the right man that was over there beforehand?
Yeah, what he means there, Doc, is if your man says to me, oh, I'm police officer John McCullough, well, he didn't say he was a constable of the peace, so he's a police officer, officer is military. So it's just to try and distinguish the difference between the two.
Righty-o, yeah, the policeman, the police constable is there to kind of serve and protect us, whereas the officer's there to enforce some sort of code.
Rules.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is don't give them recognition in any such shape or form just because they're dressed up. We can all get fancy dresses on, you know. We can all go around looking like whoever we bloody want these days. But the point, what I was going to say there, right, so when I came out of that cell, I had not, From the time they brought me into the cell and the when they brought me in there, I saw into the cell, of course, let's say they were more than friendly. And by the time they left there, I had no top on me. They took my shoes off and stuff like that. With assistance or resistance from me, my top ended up being removed without assistance or resistance from me. And when I returned to court, when I came out of the cell, before I came out of the cell, he says to me, actually, sorry, he says, put that top on. I didn't listen to them about that top or anything like that. I just got up and free to go, as if nothing happened whatsoever. I'm free to go. And when they got me back up into the court then, I went into the court at that time with a pair of jeans on, no shoes on, no top on. I couldn't see my own face, but as Ray said there, I was bruised and stuff like that, which I later found out it was. With that then, I went to walk out. When I was in the court, I went to walk out again. Just kept walking for the doors I was going for. Away with me, good luck. And these boys started standing in front of me, and I just went, who are yous? And they kept standing like as if they were obstacles they were trying to make me way, not putting the hands on me as such neither, you see, at this stage. Obstacles. But with that then, a voice behind me shouted out, sit down, you. And I just, are you addressing me? She turned round, the woman on the bench, and she goes, yes, I am. And I turned round, I says, is this a civil criminal? She replied, I'm the one that asks these questions here. And I just said,
you've already asked.
I object. Absolutely. I said, well, if we can all ask questions. I went, I object. Is that civil or criminal? I had the threat of a week for contempt or something at that stage. I object and asked, was a civil or criminal? Then there was an order made for me to be brought back downstairs. I turned around. I'd be going, I'd be heading for the other doors. They led me back down the stairs. They put me back in the cell, back in with the flashing light. A while later, then time went by. I think I was brought up the second time again.
You were? Lunch.
That was before dinner, wasn't it, Ray, the second time again?
No, it was just immediately after lunch.
Yeah, so just before lunchtime, they opened up the door and they stood there and they goes, do you want food? Again, this is them contracting. Now, people have to realise this. This is where subject matter can be handed over.
We just had a bit of an interrupt on the Skype there, so they're just offering you food.
They're offering you food, but if I get up and walk over to them and accept it, what have I just done? Contracted. So I sat there and I just went to them, if there's food on the go, you can leave it there if you wish. And I pointed my hand towards the floor. With that, the door got slammed and they buggered off on me again. No food.
Took the food away, just like they took the pen and paper away.
Absolutely. Now, before this, I'm going to state this clear. Before this, I was only into this stuff about a year, and I've listened to the Freeman stuff, Sovereign Man of the Land, the Sovereignty. I've heard all the stuff around the internet and stuff like that, and then true to my own, listening to certain individuals, true stuff and learning. Everything I, within a year's space and stuff that I had to make sense of, I had to put into practice that day. On top of what they were doing as well, I had to keep my head about me and put into practice. And I was only learning about this contract and subject matter and everything. But I put it into practice and I seen it for myself.
And you basically
shutting doors and walking off and everything else.
And you did it by basically relying on, it seems, two or three questions. Who are you? Are you addressing me? Is it civil or criminal? And just sticking with those all the way through the whole experience.
Oh, absolutely. Stick tight to simple little bloody things, but definitely not give subject matter and contract them with it and all that kind of stuff, whether it be through your name, getting up and taking something off them, even asking them for anything, you know, to do certain things and all that. There is a way of doing it, you know. But anyway, so the effect off of with the lunch on me, so they did. Brought up then the second time, it was, I don't know how to get me, got me name, the name that was given to me by my mother, but they turned it in. And look, when I went in the second time, I went to walk out again, same thing, they stood in front of me and stuff like that. I was standing there, no clothes, half naked still. the so-called judge turned around and said, sit down, Mr. Coddington. And I turned around and said, are you addressing me? And again, she replied, yes, I am. We'll take it off. And I just went, well, is this civil or criminal? And again, I got a threat with contempt. Or was I think, what happened? I think it was threatened with contempt, or I was told to be brought back a second time.
No, you were threatened with contempt and you were getting a week, right?
If so, you were brought back says, down.
And then she says he needs more time in the hole.
I'm still getting the week at that stage. That's it. She said he needs more time in the hole. Most of us don't understand the game, what's going on here. Basically, what she meant is he needs more time down in the gallows. But, yeah, he needs more time down the hole. So he led back down there. Time and boy. Brought up again, so it was. Again, it was...
Just wondering how asking a question can be contemptuous of anything.
Absolutely.
Well, it is to them.
They all ask questions.
But hold
on. They all ask questions.
I think it's worth reminding me at this point, and possibly other people as well, that actually, when all this started, you were just sitting in there kind of backing up Ray, Paul, and these guys in uniform just came.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you...
Even between me and Ray came down and asked for whatever off me, and I'd hand it to him. There wasn't even much conversation there, so there wasn't.
Why do you think this happened to you? Do you have any idea why? Because,
I don't play their game. Their game's all assumptions and presumptions. I don't play their game. Nobody told me what they done it for. No, it hasn't been explained to me to this day what their reason was. And until one of them tell me what their reason is, I can't explain it, can I? I can't explain their reasoning and their thinking until they tell me. So until that happens.
So I wonder why they took you back up out of the hole again to have another go with the judge. I wonder what they thought would work out differently, because it just was the same as the previous time. What happened next?
Well,
you see, that's what I said, Luke. Go on, Ray.
Yeah, like, when they put Paul back down the second time, there was another man who had asked after his welfare, and he'd been found in contempt as well. So they brought him up to purge his contempt, yeah? And basically, he did apologise to the court and said he was sorry for what he'd done, and he was allowed to go, yeah?
Yeah.
So he did take the blame, saying, oh, sorry, I was in contempt, right? So this is what it's all about. He wasn't smart enough, not the contract.
I was just going to say, do you have to accept the blame in order to purge contempt, or are there other ways of doing that?
Well, if you're purging contempt, you must have done something wrong, did you?
And if you're purging contempt, if you've done nothing wrong and you purge the contempt, now you've justified them.
Contempt.
Being in the wrong.
God, they're so canny, aren't they? They're so
which one
canny
do you want?
So,
the whole thing is, as long as you know you've done nothing wrong, you don't give recognition to anything that they say or anything they suspect or act like that. That's basically it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
On that end of things.
Again, that's really what we're talking about. That's what we're really talking about here, isn't it? Is the fact that you know that to be the case, and you were simply doing your best to live that whilst all of this was going on. And you sound like you were doing, like Patrick says, you've done so well, Paul. Tend to agree, because it's not an easy game to play.
Well, no, I tell you what, it is absolutely not an easy game, and especially when you're in that situation. Again, look, I went over there with Ray that morning, and me and Ray only knew each other a couple of months at that stage through whatever. I agreed to go over with Ray because I wouldn't be into going to court to a load of protesters or angry people or groups. I'm not into that sort of thing. I like to keep a lot of stuff private. That's what it's supposed to be all about, keeping it private and stuff like that. At the same time, I was glad Ray, I went with Ray than anybody else because Ray clocked on to what I was doing. I think he told me then afterwards he was very shocked by himself when I turned around and says that the judge is a civil or criminal. He couldn't believe it. But he clocked on to what I was doing. Sorry, Ray?
Go ahead, Ray.
That was it. When he asked was it civil or criminal, I knew what he was doing. And, I went, oh shit, and he went, it's civil or criminal, right? And I knew what he was doing. I knew he was looking for the loss, harm or damage. I knew what he was, and I actually expected her to answer it was civil. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because she wouldn't have been able to answer it was criminal, but she didn't, because I was expecting, you know what I mean? I was expecting different answers from the judge than we got. But when it was, Paul was after being brought up twice at this stage, and they'd freed the other guy, so we were back in the court then waiting for Paul to come back up. And at that stage, I was called out, yeah, of the court, and brought around, oh yeah, had you got missing paperwork, what was it, to list it? So I was outside talking when they snuck him in. He must have been only about 2 minutes in the court. And wow. He'll tell you then what happened. I wasn't there, so I couldn't say exactly what happened. You know?
So you were still managing the business that you were in the court for whilst all this was going on, right?
Well, I had already lost. I had already been bullied and bested and held in contempt myself, like, which I didn't accept either. Well, I was told, next time you speak, you're in contempt. But any time I did speak after that, I just wasn't listened to. So I was just ignored at that stage, and they just gave a repossession order on my dwelling.
Right.
Right. So I was already distraught because of that. And now I'm in there, and I'm watching the man that came to court with me that morning. He had offered to drive me over. We were friends. He was minding my paperwork. He always had a good word in my ear when I needed it, because Paul sees the logical question a lot of the time. And now here I was, the man I'd come to court with was now locked up downstairs. I had no paperwork to defend myself. And in all fairness, I was emotionally distraught and under severe duress, and they continued with the court case.
Did it make a difference, do you think, to the way your case... Well, I mean, obviously, they'd taken all your paperwork and your support away. That must have made a difference to the way your gig was played, didn't it? I mean...
Well, it stopped my gig because, like, the stuff that Paul had was stuff that I would have been relying upon. Like, right. I had an official offer in there that I would have been saying, are you refusing my offer? Here's my receipts, or what have you done with the payments you've already accepted? But they were all gone with the paperwork. And basically, his affidavit was something, there was about 19 statements of claim on it. And I had sat down, and I had critically thought about each one of them statements on that affidavit. And I was pretty confident that I could make him withdraw most of what was on that affidavit. But my paperwork was missing. Yeah.
So that's another really important point to make, is the official offer is one of these things that orthodoxy, shall we say, finds extremely difficult to resist. So it would appear, would it not, at first glance, that basically rather than face it, they actually did all this stuff to Paul and did for you in the process. This doesn't sound much like justice to me, mate.
Well, look, it didn't sound like justice, and later on when I thought about it, it actually looked like it was all planned, and I heard other things about what happened 2 days previous to that court case and people, you know what I mean, getting together and that. But that's beside the point. I can't prove any of that,
no,
you know?
No, fair enough. That's a thoroughly dreadful bloody situation to be in.
So he's outside the court, Paul is back before the court, and this is when she sentenced him.
Right. And what did she sentence you to, Paul?
Well, then this is where when I was brought up the third time, the magic number 3, again, the same thing, I asked was a civil or criminal, She could be held in contempt for 2 weeks at this stage, and I just went, well, I object, and I don't accept. Is that civil or criminal? And with that, I got led off back down to the gallows, down into the cells, and I spent the rest of the day. And put me on to the P-Wagon, as we'd call it, the peace fund, so-called peace fund. Because we're not Garda fans, that's for sure. But before they put me onto the Garda van, I turned around and I asked the Garda, can you show me the warrant for holding me? And he did show me a piece of paper, which didn't look right to me. Anyway, they put me into that. They brought me off to prison. Ray got in contact with me through prison. It was the phone, anyway. They couldn't find me for a couple of days, Ray will explain. I went into prison and I knew nothing about what was going on the outside until I heard about Ray.
Until
Ray got contacted me.
Because they took you in and presumably you were not signing things and not giving your name over and continuing to ask who people were. Is that what you were still doing?
I was trying not to consent still, yeah, and still do learning into practice and stuff like that rather than being bullied and intimidated. I was trying to put things into practice, stuff that I learned, and the only way I'm going to find out is by doing it.
And did you find that?
You're in the situation, it's either get bullied and stuff like that, or ask the questions, whether they're right or not, you'll only know by their response, and that's what I actually done most of it through.
And you must have found that quite supportive. I mean, it must have been quite good to have some kind of framework in which to handle the situation. I should have think it probably was made it a little bit more of a game, did it?
No, because you have to. The mind is responding. You're responding to what's happening there and then. So you don't know what's going to happen next to be making a game plan.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good point.
And you don't, you know, you can only approach each situation as it comes as well. You know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way I was going. I just bought like this. I was trying to keep in the right frame of mind. And if you start getting worried and pressurized and all that, you're not going to. You could end up consenting and all that kind of stuff. You know, yeah. Saying. Anyways, I was in the so-called prison system then. So I was because I didn't give me name and consent. I didn't sign into that bed and breakfast and all that kind of stuff. They had a few. It was a few days before they could find me. So I'll bring Ray, let Ray explain that end of things. I said I only found out what were, the coverage that I got and everything else, I only found out through Ray. So that's where he'd be best explaining all that.
Right, well, look, Paul was locked up. I had just lost my dwelling, or they'd just given a repossession order on my dwelling. There was a lot of people who were after being in the court that day. We ferried ourselves back. By the way, as soon as they took him, the heavens opened and it couldn't piss any harder. Okay? And we were all out there. We had the heaps of cars and basically get stuff home from the courts. And then when I got home from the court, I had to try and figure out how to get Paul
I think
back.
Sorry, Ray, for cutting in. Was it a second visit up or somewhere in between the court case, all of a sudden so-called armed guards and stuff arrived?
Well, they arrived during the break. Actually, so they did. They arrived during the when you were taken the first time, and they actually lined the walls of the courthouse.
So when Paul got taken downstairs, when they brought it by in between times, in between bringing him back up, he'd become really dangerous, and they filled the place with armed police for him.
Yeah, like at this stage, somebody had turned on a camera, yeah, and it was now streaming this live onto the internet, mm-hmm. Right? And obviously the Gardaí were very interested to know who was streaming, yeah?
Right.
Wow.
God.
Like, basically, look, it went out and it got a lot of hits and everything like that. But after Paul was sentenced, I was trying to figure out how to get him out. Mm. And somebody mentioned habeas corpus to me. And I just thought about habeas corpus for a minute. Is the question actually that's asked there with habeas corpus is, is the detention lawful? It's not, is the detention legal? It has nothing to do with legal. It's Article 40.3 of the Bunrock na Héireann, actually. Is the detention lawful? Yeah?
But just to be clear, you don't need that, do you? It works just as well in England, even though we haven't got Bunraich and Hearn over here.
Absolutely. Habeas corpus is... Sorry, go on, Ray. You could explain that.
Yeah, a habeas corpus in the UK, I do believe, is called the King's Writ, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, and it's exactly the same process, right? Yeah. And it's the whole question here is to figure out, is the detention lawful, right? So basically, Paul had asked a very, very, very interesting question in the court, and he'd asked, is it civil or criminal? Now, I had no idea. Remember, the only time I'm in a court is I had to be in the court because I was now defending my dwelling, but I didn't know an awful lot about the law. Still don't. But basically, I had to go and get help. So a guy had done a habeas corpus for water protesters a few weeks before, and I got in touch with him. Now, aware, He was, as far as I was concerned, he was a tool in the system that I needed to use because I'd already been told I wasn't allowed to do a habeas corpus before the courts.
Okay, right, so this was a member of the profession, was it?
This was a member of the profession who had done one recently, right, to get water protesters off. So I rang him, it must have been 10 o'clock at night, and believe it or not, I got him, right? And I arranged for a meeting the next morning with him, and we sat down and we talked about a few questions, and he asked me what happened, and I told him, as I remembered it, what happened, and he was saying, oh, well, look at it, because before they bring the body of the man to the court, you have to give them a reason why to bring the body of the man to the court, right? So I was saying things like, well, this man has committed no crime, he's not a danger to society. Is this a civil, is the claim civil or criminal? Yeah. And he added other stuff like, oh, there's confusion about whether it's 1 or 2 weeks, but that wasn't the stuff that I had asked him to do. He added his own spin to it, stuff that we wouldn't bother with. I had asked, the three things I had asked that he'd asked the court was, is it civil or criminal? Why was this man locked up? He had committed no crime, and why was he locked up? Because he was not a danger to society at large, right? So they were my things. So that was over the weekend, so they couldn't get a judge. And anyway, we couldn't find Paul Cottington. We couldn't find him. I had been, we didn't know what prison he had been taken to, and we were not getting any information from Gertie.
How did you find out in the end where he was?
Well, I had a good idea he had gone to the Midlands, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Since it was Rohan, the police van that was outside.
Well, it's lucky you were observing that, isn't it? It's lucky you were observing that.
But there's two prisons in the Midlands. There's Port Leash Prison. And there's the Midlands Prison, yeah.
At this stage, the media... were after doing a bad coverage on me, so they were, the day I got arrested. Their headlines was, brother of murder victim, goes to jail for helping people with their houses. So they tried to blacken me and stuff. But little did they know, at the same time in the Royal Arachus, they were bringing up the whole scenario about what happened to this man in, over in Trim that was brought up black and blue and standing there half naked. Because if that was a woman, be classed as rape, and it'd be on every news report around the bloody world.
Well, I was going to say, because you hadn't mentioned the fact that that had happened to you, I assumed that you'd stripped yourself naked and beaten yourself up for the sake of kind of like balance. But I mean,
I don't know that, and I still got to go up there and ask the simple question: is it civil or criminal? Do you know what I mean?
Well, look, I'll tell you what. Look, the line with Paul has been a bit dodgy since the beginning, and it's getting a bit worse. So, what I'm going to propose we do is just put in 5 or 6 minutes of music, and I'll call you two back up again. We'll make a new party.
Okay, cool, Doc.
Is that all right? So, after what happened to Paul, you're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show, and Paul Cotty, I'm talking to Paul Cotty and Ray Hall. We'll try and clean up the connection a bit in the meantime, in the honour of everything that's been going on. This is The Tubes, and Don't Touch Me There.
Oh, baby, move closer to me. I've had all that I can stand. Take hold of me with your hands.
Oh, baby.
Dr. Rock's radio show on autonomousmedia.net. Live internet chat radio every Thursday night at 9. We go to 11.
That was Big D and the Kids Table and Strictly Rude. Of course, our guest tonight, Paul Cotty, was being strictly polite, as was the individual that he was helping out, Ray Hall, but it all went, as we heard before the break, I suppose badly wrong in one way, but I suppose in another way you were both learning, weren't you, folks? Oh, hang on a moment, I'll press the green button. There you go, you can answer the question now, they'll be able to hear you.
Yeah, it was definitely a learning curve, so it was.
So, Paul, Ray, you were starting to talk about how it was that you managed, once you'd located Paul, how it was you managed to extract him from their clutches.
First of all, we didn't know how to locate. We didn't know where he was. So, as you know, we're both involved in People's Internet Radio and things like that. So we started a media campaign. Where is Paul Cottington? Yeah, he was last seen, and it was just a shadow of a man. It was a picture that was shared over 10,000 times on Facebook.
Yeah.
He was last seen in a courthouse in Trim. Right. It happened to him. It could happen to you. Right. So basically there was a lot of talk about it, and I was very busy on Twitter, and we were running a multimedia campaign, and I had the solicitor hooked up and ready to go, and we didn't find him till Sunday, right? On Sunday I got a call from a Garda in Trim who said that Paul Cottington was in the Midlands prison. Yeah, but like I had already made arrangements for a senator that I knew, right? A senator up in the Ryler office. I had spoken to him about this, and I complained that basically they had taken a man from a courthouse who had done absolutely nothing wrong to him, and he was livid, to be honest with you, because he is a fairly upstanding guy. While I know he works for the other side, he's still a kind of an upstanding guy. So on Monday...
And it does have to be said that what they did was absolutely inexcusable and really, really blatant.
Oh, it was absolutely horrendous, and like it's not over yet, you know. But like, basically, by Monday, I knew where he was, and I went to Dublin that Monday morning. And basically, Paul was to be brought to the courts at 3 o'clock that day. But seemingly, they hadn't figured out the question on the affidavit that was killing them was, is it civil or criminal, right? So the solicitor gave me some bullshit excuse as to why he wouldn't be there. I'd been up there from 9 o'clock that morning. I sat in the city until, I don't know, 4:30 that day. And then I came home again with the guarantee. But like before I came home, I went to the solicitor's office and I demanded that he produce the body of the man tomorrow. Yeah?
Yeah.
12 o'clock in the High Court, right? And when we arrived the next morning, right, in the court, that was on a Tuesday, when we arrived in the Tuesday morning on the court, yes, Paul, I actually going across the round room in the courthouse, we bumped into Paul, right? So, yeah, he was a kind of being chaperoned by two other gentlemen. But at this stage, the solicitor was playing for the other side. And he stopped to us and he says, okay, the question, civil or criminal, they're having a serious amount of difficulty and it's causing a lot of confusion as to what everything is here. And he says, what if she says it's, he turned around then and I don't know, did he trick Paul or was he using his cunning? But he says, what if she answers it's criminal? What would you have said? Yeah?
Yeah.
And Paul says, well, produce the injured man or woman so that amends may be made. And he went, right, and what if it was civil? And Paul says, I recall signing no such contract, right? So they knew there was an answer for both ones, right? So they went off, and then they says, okay, we're adjourning this, it'll be 3 o'clock, in court 13, and be back at the doors.
Was there not some meds?
Sorry?
Was there not some meds made at I said, well, they can't speak one's mind.
Yeah, they asked... He asked you, what did you think that the judge taught? Yeah? And you says, I can't think what she thinks. Yeah?
they were clearly just pumping you. Do you think you were... I'm interested that you told them, rather than saying, well, why don't you try asking me where it counts?
Yeah. Well, look, at this stage, they knew, so we were...
No.
We went off to lunch. This was going ahead.
But here's the most important thing. Test them 1, 2, 3.
Oh, that sounds a bit better.
Yeah, what I was going to say before he did leave as well, he did turn around and say, that question is causing an awful lot of controversy within the courts.
Yes. And confusion.
On that note, as I was saying before we came on air, Paul, I'm not sure that you were around, Ray, but I've been chatting with Pete, who's with the kitchen posse in the kitchen at the moment, Pete Kroll. And apparently the question of civil or criminal is a matter of massive confusion actually within the profession. They have nothing like our clarity of understanding of it.
Of course it is, because criminal. What is criminal? Okay? Criminal is loss, harm, or damage to another or their property. It's nothing else, right? So if it's a criminal offence, it's an act of legislation or something like that. All acts and legislation are civil. So all road offences, all this crap that they say is criminal, is actually civil because it's an act or a statute. And when it's civil, they know they need a signed consent, and they don't have it. So they bullshit everybody into thinking it's criminal, and they'll say to you, oh, it's a criminal offence to drive a car without insurance under the Road Traffic Act of 2012, Section 18, Subsection 1. It's gibberish for the court, yeah?
But in this case, your signed consent is equivalent to a contract, isn't it? A contract signed consent as well.
Well, there is no other sort of a contract.
No.
It's a verbal... Yeah. You know, but like...
There is.
Say again, Paul?
I was going to say there is like other contracts, like meetings of the minds and stuff, but you're right, like... I'm gone, is it? Testing?
Yeah, no, yeah, you're there, you're back.
What if she said it was a hybrid?
Yeah. And the answer...
See, what's the answer to that?
Well, is that civil or criminal?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
because that's what the criminal that they're using is criminal.
Having real difficulty hearing you, Paul. You're breaking up quite a lot, unfortunately. Even before we had the music break, I'm not quite sure what to do about it, because we can hear Ray really clearly, but I can't hear you, which is a bit difficult.
That's like 39 megabytes.
Yes, it's I'm plugged into a router as well. It does help.
If you want to hold Ray onto the show, we can sort of be coming on again, and Ray can give it more or less a rundown on what.
Yeah, I think that.
I know it's best if I say it's what, but if I'm breaking up, it's not.
No, well, they can't. They won't be able to hear what you're saying. I don't think. I've been listening quite hard. We did in the first bit of it, but if I think that'd be great if Ray's happy to hang around, stay on till sort of 11 o'clock and talk us through what happened, and we'll try and get you a better connection and get you back on as soon as we can. How about that?
That's okay with me.
Absolutely, and I'll join in chat there, and I'll listen in the background to see if
that. Thanks, Paul. Thanks very much for trying again. We will give that one another go, obviously, in the near future. But in the meantime, we'll continue with Ray, who was present through pretty much the whole thing, weren't you?
I instigated the habeas corpus anyway. So basically, 3 o'clock. This says court 13 upstairs. 13. Do you get it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And 3 o'clock, you know, the tree was there as well, yeah? And we went off and we got lunch, and I met a constitutional lawyer. Like, I used to be involved in politics, and basically I was saying a few things to him, and he turned around to me and he says, watch that solicitor. He says, he doesn't stand in honour, right? So I didn't really put any pass on that.
This is the solicitor that you went to because you'd done a habeas corpus, yeah?
Yeah, he doesn't really stand in honour. So, it was too late. It was 10 to 3 at that stage. It was too late. We walked back into the court. I got a phone call to say, ditch the solicitor. But, at that stage, it's too late, yeah? So we went upstairs and we were sitting with Paul, and then counsel for the state. Now, they came down, like, you know the way, they're all dressed in the wigs, with the big pointy collars, yeah? And they kind of floated down the hallway at the courthouse, yeah? The two of them together, and they point at the solicitor down here, and basically there's a chat held in private down the bottom of the hall between them three, and they come back up and they say to Paul, congratulations, you've won your case, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
Right, and we said why, and they just says state accepts full liability and all full liability and all costs are to be sorted. Yeah, so basically that was it. Paul, they took the handcuffs off Paul, but we had to go in. The judge had to formally release him. So there was a bit of banter between the judge and the solicitor and the barristers, and a bit of ho 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 ho, yes, my lord, and this crime. I didn't really understand what they were talking about. It seemed a different language to me, because I just didn't understand exactly what they were saying. And then they wished each other a good week, and off they went. Yeah,
one of those times when you really wish you had a recorder running, isn't it?
Yeah, and then Paul was released, obviously, and then the solicitor came outside and he says, well done. And you know what I mean, he nearly wanted to pat himself on the back, but he was still working his job because the reporter's outside the front of the court. So he escorted us to the back of the court, down the back hall and down the back stairs, which actually suited us because we didn't want to talk to the reporters anyway. And
kind of keeping it private's a good idea at that stage in the game, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah. So we got out of the court, up around the corner, big high five, into the car, cigarette, and off home with us. And that was our experience with habeas corpus. But habeas corpus is, it doesn't always work. Well, it should have worked, but it didn't work because, like, later after that, like, after we got Paul out, it was now time for me to deal with the order that had been, the repossession order that had been put on my dwelling. So myself and Paul went off and we gathered a few bits of information. We didn't know what to do. And we had 3 months to do a judicial review. And on the last day of that, we actually done a judicial review. And while we were in there in the courts doing this judicial review, another woman got locked up down in Cork that I knew. Basically, she was locked up for being in contempt of court. She was sentenced to 2 weeks in Cork prison, Limerick prison. And she was a woman in her 50s. And another friend of mine, Ben Gilroy, did a habeas corpus on her behalf. But nobody asked the question, is it civil or criminal? Like, they were all asking, is the detention lawful and everything like that. And myself and Paul actually attended all of these. There were 4 or 5 court cases, and we attended them all. And we kept telling them on the other side, just ask, is it civil or criminal? Just ask, is it civil or criminal? And nobody there, they were all, one was, he was an ex-canvasser for a political party, and he's supposed to be a hot shot in the courts. There was quite a few people there who should have known, right? And it started to turn into a nightmare because it now was 1 day, 2 days, 3 days back at the court, 4 days, and then we'll have a decision the next day. This is a habeas corpus that's supposed to make a decision on whether the detention is lawful, right?
There and then.
No other question needs to be asked. They need to only ask, is the detention lawful and is the matter civil or criminal? That's all they need to know, right? And then they can get it. Once they have the answers to them questions, they can move on. But a big hullabaloo was made of it. And then after about, I think it was the 5th or 6th court case that was heard, the counsel stood up. Myself and Paul were still there. We showed them on the constitution what questions to ask and everything. Still nobody was listening, right? So the counsel got up this evening and they made a big hullabaloo, and he was reading from criminal law, and he turned around, he says, and that's why the detention of such and such a woman is legal. And I says, but your question is whether she's been held lawful, right? And I went up and I whispered it back into the council again, but something tells me one of the guys that was in there wasn't acting in the woman's best interests. Yeah,
she had a member of the profession acting for her, did she?
Well, look, he used to be part of the profession, so one has to wonder where his loyalties lie. Like, yeah, I've watched a few things that this same man has been involved in, and they all involve a certain bank, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
He gets involved, right? So one has to think, one makes up their own mind about what he is or what he isn't, yeah? And Andy Young correctly says in there, in the chat box, it was Claire Knowles, yes, it was.
Yeah.
That case was. But she lost her case, yeah? And with it, she because she lost her case, she was now out on bail and she was remanded, and it just went as if all the contempt and the reason why she was in contempt all fell into a mess because the contempt was upheld. She now had to give up her dwelling. Yeah?
Yeah.
And there was an order placed on her not to go near that dwelling. It all turned into a mess for that woman when all they needed to ask was the simple question, is it civil or criminal, and who's making the claim? Like, if basically, if they'd said, oh, it's criminal, yeah? She's disobeying a court order because she was between a rock and a hard place. This was her choice. It was give up her dwelling to the bank or go to jail. That was her choice. So I would say that's between a rock and a hard place.
And that is criminal. That is criminal.
Refused. Yeah, and she refused to do either, so they sent her to jail, yeah? Mm. Now, the judge, the judge that made that decision, he must have made that claim, yeah?
Yeah.
That it was a criminal, like, but there was no criminal element there, you know what I mean? So basically the question should have been asked, was it civil or criminal? But the answer was simple, because she was in jail, it must be criminal. So really now you want to know is, who's making the claim, and have they put a documented, verified claim of loss, harm or damage before that court?
That's a good point. That's a good question to be asking next, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like, oh, is it civil or criminal? Oh, it's criminal. Oh, who's making the claim?
The thing is about the civil or criminal thing, it seems to me, in that context, is that that question itself and their inability to answer it is what proves that the it's unlawful imprisonment or kidnapping or whatever. Is the fact that they can't answer that shows that it's unlawful, doesn't it?
Well, if you know and I know, look, say you're standing there and you've been accused of a criminal offence, right? And you know you haven't caused you haven't hurt somebody, you haven't stolen off somebody, you haven't caused them loss or harm or damage in any shape or form. Yeah, you haven't even insulted them, so you haven't hurted their feelings, right?
Yeah.
How can anything be criminal if you haven't done that? Criminal is loss, harm, damage. Nothing more, nothing less. Right? That's it. It's not hard. That's the law. The law of the sovereign. Cause no loss, harm, or damage to another man or his property. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's that simple.
So was that it for Paul then? Did you, after the habeas corpus, was that the end of that? Or did they proceed further?
Well, look, Paul has other private business that he's attending to on that one. But it's not for me to discuss that here. Yeah?
Yeah. So that's kind of continuing because this is
more or less done. That one was more or less done with. But basically, a few months later, the judges in the court were using this contempt, handing out a slap. You know what I mean? And they were locking up people all over the place, all over the country. So that was why we were talking about Joe Ducey earlier on. The next time, a few months later after that, I'm trying to look to see is there a date on this. I have actually a habeas corpus application in front of me. It's not dated. But it's another friend of mine brought a habeas corpus on behalf of Joe Ducey, who was actually found, him and another guy, were found in contempt of court for making a comment outside of court when the court was adjourned. Yeah, they were outside on the public footpath, and one lad said to the other about something about the judge, and the judge was walking by and he overheard a private conversation between two men, right? And when he reconvened the court, he had them two men brought to the court, and he sentenced them both to 2 weeks in prison for contempt of court over a comment that
you're
he says
joking. Made about.
I'm not. This is the level that they were stooping to. So this friend of mine, Ben Gilroy, decided that he was going to do a habeas corpus. It was totally wrong. And he was going to bring them back out on a habeas corpus. And basically one of his first, he put in an affidavit and he explained about what happened, what he believed has happened. And basically he says, basically, I say that it and believe and understand that the judge has acted ultra vires and that he deliberately ignored the fact that both men were beyond the jurisdiction of the court, being on a public footpath and assumed jurisdiction and asked the Gardaí to go out to the public footpath and arrest both men. I say this would be set a dangerous precedent if this honourable court was to allow district court judges jurisdiction to jail for contempt for any comment made on a public footpath that they only heard. The right to a fair trial and any such offence would be destroyed if the judge was allowed to be complainant and judge and jury in his own cause, especially in circumstances where the alleged contempt was made when the court was not sitting and the comment was made on a public street. So that was basically some of the stuff that Ben had in to bring the
Sounds like that judge had been reading too much Judge Dredd to me.
But, yeah. But look, that judge is off his head. Yeah, he shouldn't be a judge, to be honest with you, right? Like, it's not the first time he's come to the headlines in the papers for something that he's done that's absolutely ridiculous off his head. Yeah.
So how did Ben's habeas corpus progress then with these two? Because once again, he's picked on something where the behaviour has been absolutely obviously outrageous.
Yeah, well, the first question, though, like Ben asked me about the habeas corpus we done this time, and I told him the only question we asked was, is it civil or criminal,
which is a question that Ben's well familiar with from other contexts, isn't it?
Yeah, but like, they worked it out anyway, so when he went into court, the first question was, is it civil or criminal? And that was at about 11 o'clock in the day, and 8 o'clock that night, they had brought in books, you know, trolley loads of books and everything to try and find out whether it was civil or criminal, because they couldn't answer it. And the judge wanting his dinner. Yeah, it was actually the same judge that I was after having my case up in front of. Wanting his dinner, says if you can't, like, they couldn't decide whether it was civil or criminal. So they actually had to go and say, they had to release them in the finish up, as there was no, the judge wasn't actually putting up a documented verified claim of loss, harm or damage. The guy that sentenced them, because he was the one that was making the claim, so they had to let them go. But that, the question that was asked there was, and it was the only question I believe that was asked as well, is it civil or criminal? When they got to the court, what you heard me reading out was some of the stuff that had to be in the affidavit to go before the court to get the body of the man brought to the court.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And then they brought in...
The process goes, oh, Dr. Rock has been locked up and he's in Manchester prison, right? Somebody wants to go get you out. They might have to go off and do a King's writ. So they have to go and they have to, it's usually free. So they have to go and find a reason why you shouldn't be locked up. Like, basically, they need to know he was locked up for spitting on the path. Well, that's not a criminal offence, right? Show me that. Put in an affidavit that justifies why you're locked up, yeah? And then tell them that you believe it's not and you want the body of the man brought before the court, and then you ask the question, is it a criminal? Yeah, so it is basically, first of all, you have to do the paperwork, then you have to go and see a judge. He'll decide whether they're going to bring the body of the man forward, and basically then when you get the body of the man brought into the court, then you ask the question. Yeah,
right,
civil or criminal.
So we've got a couple of cases now where that's actually paid off and worked well for us.
Yeah. So,
and the other thing I think it's important to emphasize here is that although it's not something I've heard talked about a lot for, I think, evident reasons, one of the reasons why you stay peaceful and put everybody and accept and acknowledge people's oaths of office and all that kind of stuff is so that you can take some kind of corresponding action after the fact. Is there a lot of activity that goes on after one of these events and where you can try and get, or is just making them go away the main aim?
There should be, because if you're unlawfully, if I took you away, yeah, and I locked you up for 3 nights or 4 nights or 5 nights, yeah?
Yeah.
Didn't I take you away from your family? Didn't I take you away from your loved ones? Didn't I cause you loss? Did I cause you harm because I put the fear of God in you? You're locked up with strangers. Did I cause you damage? Of course I damaged your reputation. You've just been locked up in jail. So they have actually caused loss, harm, or damage. No, like the loss is the time you could have spent with your family. Mm. The damage is the emotions that the duress that they're putting you under, the hardship that they're causing you.
So you do get a chance to have a go back, do you?
You can have a, if you decide to go and say you want to, you want to be sorted out for that breach of your sovereignty, I suppose, yeah, breach of your freedom.
But it's probably better to walk away if that's an option that's open to you, isn't it?
No, I'd go looking for the readies myself now. Okay.
Yeah, and one of the things I think about that, see, is that a lot of the men and the women that are actually enacting this stuff on the ground don't actually know the first thing about what they're doing. So even if for no other reason, I feel it's worth having a go after the event, because some people might change their behaviour as a result of what they hear and read.
Well, okay, look, if you go in there and you're successful with a habeas corpus, right, so you've just proved that they erred in law, right? So now there is actually a case, yeah? Mm. So while I wouldn't bother going after them myself, then I might walk down the road to get one of them guys that are trained to do that. Like, I think they advertise all over the tellys, claims specialists. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Right. I would probably, if you're going to fight a bulldog, throw in another bulldog. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I've not heard that suggested before. So, because normally we assume, don't we, that the legal profession is not reliable as far as we're concerned. Are these claims companies something separate from our normal accepted legal profession, or what? Why are they?
Oh no! Look, if you have a claim of lost harm or damage and you can prove it, well, look, I was locked up for 5 nights. I was imprisoned. Yeah, it caused me duress. Well, that's loss. I was away from my loved ones. I was under severe duress while I was in there. Well, that's emotional stress. It was causing me hardship. Maybe you need to sleep a certain way in your own certain bed when you're at home. Like, they're causing you hardship. This is not normal in your life. They've defamated your name, yeah? And you've been kidnapped.
Absolutely right. So you're basically, in this case, you're approaching the profession to prove that a criminal event has occurred.
Yeah, and it wasn't you. It was they were the criminals. So now it's time to go in. So, but remember now, you can start and you can maybe try and go after judges and things like that. But like, it wasn't them. It was the court. So now you take your claim against the state. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's the state that released you. So it must have been the state that was holding you, you know, and it was the state that was holding you. So if I was taking a claim, I'd put the claim in against the state. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I wouldn't go looking for individuals to whip or whatever, unless you have good reason to, like that somebody blatantly assaulted you in full public view, and you have witnesses.
Well,
yeah,
okay, fair enough. Because I mean, it certainly sounds like Paul had a bit of an ugly occurrence there, but it wasn't in public view, and there were effectively no witnesses, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, look, you've got to deal with what you've got. You can only say what you see, right? You use a catchphrase over there, yeah, say what you see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really what it is. Like Paul specializes in keeping things simple, yeah? And, like, believe it or not, that guy has taught me so much, right? Because it's always about the critical question. It's about thinking critically, and it's about asking the question that they can't answer, yeah? Mm.
And that's what he emphasized all the way through his story. You know, are you addressing me? Who are you? Is it civil or criminal? Can you show me a warrant? I think in total, through the whole experience, he maybe just asked half a dozen questions over and over and over again. And really, I mean, although I think your normal man and woman on the street would look at what happened and stuff and go, well, that really didn't work, did it? You know, you got yourself into all sorts of trouble there. I would bet that if Paul was still on the line, he'd argue that that was actually a pretty successful experiment in terms of those questions. And I bet you'd agree, wouldn't you?
We got the right result. Okay, so he got locked up. Yeah, I'm sure it didn't take too well. Look, I don't know. I don't know Paul inside. But look, he got locked up. There was nothing he could do about it. He was locked up in the wrong. So basically, we done a habeas corpus. We proved that he was locked up in the wrong, and that there was no justification for the action that they took. So we got him out, and he was released. Now, what happens after that is up to Paul, you know?
Well, I've no doubt we'll hear about it as it unfolds, because those things, like I say, there's a point at which it has to go into the private and stay there for a while. Paul and I were hoping to talk a bit about what happened to him kind of mid-December, when a bunch of armed men kind of came pouring into his house. And I guess we'll have to wait for him to tell the first-hand story of that. But this was a case in... Can you give us the bit of background and then explain how the habeas corpus didn't work quite so well this time?
Well, look, basically, strangers, they went into Paul's house in the middle of the night, on one night in December. Look at the story, I wasn't there, so I can't give you a full detail of what happened exactly in the house. But, like, basically, the long and the short of it was Paul was assaulted and removed from the house. Basically, he was brought to court, and then he was remanded to prison, right? And... he was remanded. Now, remember, he hadn't been sentenced, yeah?
Yeah.
So, basically, I went up to the courts the next morning to do a habeas corpus, and you see, when you're on remand, habeas corpus can't be used because the man is not... because bail is the remedy for a man. So,
habeas corpus will only work if you've been sentenced, is it?
Sentenced. Yeah, you must be sentenced.
Okay.
Right. So you must have, they must have decided you're guilty, because now that's the only way you can ask then, is the detention lawful?
And
right?
Did we have any reason for why Paul was kind of rushed back into the private corporate prison system again? Do we know why this happened?
Well, we look at, again, that's not for me to speculate upon, you know, like, Paul has his own ideas, but nobody, we don't actually know why.
I guess he's been asking them whether it's civil or criminal, and they haven't been telling him, so he hasn't got any basis for making an opinion.
Well, basically, look at, the first thing, they came into his, they broke into his dwelling, yeah? So, like, if somebody breaks into your house and doesn't tell you who they are, like, you need to know who they are. So you would ask them who they are. And at some stage, I believe some man identified himself as a Garda, and he was held to his oath of office, accepted and acknowledged and held to his oath of office. And he was asked for the lawful warrant.
Yep.
You know, I see Paul telling me there, I can say what was aired, right? But look, I think you tell the story much better, Paul. Now, like, look at what happened in Paul's house that night, included a bit of assault, and actually a live round being dropped at Paul's head. So,
live rounds don't just drop out of these modern machines, you know.
No, it dropped out, like, when he was asking for who they were and things like that, like, and he was a live round, like, he'd asked the question, like, I do believe he'd asked the question, are you here to shoot us, yeah? Mm. And that was when the round and was dropped on his head.
And a couple of men that were with Paul were also arrested and taken in, weren't they, and later released?
Okay. They were just held in the house there, and they were released then, and they held on to Paul.
Okay.
But, like, I think Paul will tell you better what that is. I wouldn't like to bring, he can recall it perfectly. I was away in another part of the country. I only had mostly the hearsay. Now I have the first-hand story from Paul. But, like, again, I think he would tell you the story much better, and it would come much better from him.
Yeah.
And, you know...
It's not a problem.
It's best to do another show on that. But, As Paul was locked up, I'll go through what I did.
Thanks.
Right, so basically I went to the courts and I tried to get a habeas corpus, and they wouldn't accept it in the courts because he was on remand. He wasn't. So the remedy for remand is bail. Right.
Now, the thing with the bail is that one of the messages I've taken on board over the last 5 or 6 years is that you don't actually take bail, and I would imagine that's how Paul would have approached it, wasn't it?
That was exactly, he was offered bail and he refused it,
mm-hmm.
right? Or he didn't refuse it, he just didn't take it because they hadn't answered his question. He'd asked the question, yeah. Is it civil or criminal? So basically they hadn't answered that question. So, like, as far as Paul, I know Paul quite well, and I know, well, he's not going to move till he gets an answer, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, so if he asks a question and they just sidetrack it and move on, and then they say something else and you answer to that, well, then you've just acquiesced on your civil or criminal, right? Because you've moved on. So Paul is smart enough not to move on, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm only here for this. Yeah. So basically he's only there to know if that's civil or criminal and who's making the claim. Like, that's really all Paul would ever be. That's the only question you should be asking if you're in front of the court.
Mm.
Yeah. Is this a civil or... It doesn't matter what court you're in front of, for what. Yeah, if you haven't caused loss, harm or damage, the first question you should be asking is this a civil or criminal matter? Yeah?
Yeah.
And you'd be asking them to say civil, or if they say criminal, you're now looking to know who's making the claim and have they got a documented verified claim of loss, harm or damage before the court?
Yeah.
Yeah? So that you can make amends. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah? So basically, that's what you're looking for. You know what I mean, from these people. But, like, I tried that. So I went to see Paul in prison then on the Saturday, and I thought that bail was still granted to him, and that I says, look, at all you have to do to get out, there's no other way to get you out, is, and he had other private matters happening the following week for him, and he needed to be out. And I says, what you have to do is go and ask for the bail. I says, and they'll just release you and I'll bring you home with me, right? Because there wasn't any bonds or anything. There wasn't any money bonds or anything like that. But they didn't send it to the prison with him. They just sent him off for a week, right? So I hunted around. I done look at. I looked after one or two of Paul's private things that he had to get done that week, and then he was in court again on the Thursday morning. And I went to the court, and I got to do a few hand signals for him while he was in the box because I wasn't allowed up near him. And he knew that to take the bail at that stage, and there was no objections, so we did take the bail so that we could have him out for Christmas. And he's been in court on that matter twice since.
And how's that going?
Oh, that's going really well. They're struggling for a contract, yeah.
Which, as I say, it's quite one of the things that that you realise when you're talking to Paul, because he does remember so well about how these things turn out, is that these guys know exactly what the game is. We're not making up this idea that they need you to consent or anything like that. You can hear from the way they behave with Paul that they know what they're after.
They know. Like, I had a very interesting conversation with a Garda a few weeks ago who was at the dropping some summonses through my letterbox on Christmas week, right? And I went up to give them back to him. And I gave him a letter to give to the guard that I was issuing it as well, right? So the little notice, you know, with a few things that he needed to do for me if he was making a claim, yeah?
Yeah.
But we got talking about things like that, and more or less, from what the Garda was telling me, he was well skilled in the art of contract, and he was well skilled in the art of deception. You know what I mean? On how to trick you. Show me your license, right? As soon as you show him that driver's license, you're the legal fiction. And
I heard of it.
He's always guilty.
I've been watching a guy in America who's getting prosecuted for this and hopes to get it in front of a jury, but somebody required him at the side of the road to show a license, and he just asked the question. He said, can the information on my driver's license be used to incriminate me in a court of law? And the policeman
just... his driver's license. He must remember that. It's not his driver's license.
That's true. So effectively, he kind of ceded jurisdiction by asking the question.
Absolutely. He gave the driving license life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, there is ways around that as well. Look, you could say, look, they're going to play their game, and it's just, do you know your game? That's more or less it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that you have to behave as if you know the game rather than explain that you do.
Now, let's look at what does a court need? What do you need to form a court? Well, you need a plaintiff and a defendant. Yeah.
Yeah.
You need subject matter, and you need a competent witness, right?
Nice summary, I like that. I can see immediately there's a few holes in what's actually going on.
Sorry, Paul has put in here, when taking bail, what did Paul say to the judge? Well, Paul actually says to the judge, I was made an offer last week, and he says, I'm under duress here, so I'll accept that offer. Now, that was made to me last week under duress, yeah?
So he didn't actually have to directly ask for something. He just reminded them of an offer of contract that they'd made.
Yeah, and he said he was accepting it under duress here. That's a very important word, yeah?
Right. Okay, so,
it under duress.
Okay, yes.
He made an offer of advice. Yes, he did, actually. The judge actually offered Paul advice, which he didn't take, yeah?
What did the judge suggest Paul do?
The judge says, my advice to you would be to take a, I think it was a legal, to get a solicitor or basically like that. And the judge did offer him, but Paul didn't accept that. And he didn't actually answer him, as far as I can remember. And he did, when it was time to speak, Paul says, I'm under duress here, but I was made an offer last week. I'd like to take that offer now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way he signed, then he would have signed for that in a certain way as well. Yeah,
it's so subtle, isn't it? It's so subtle and difficult to explain. It's only by hearing about how people enact these things that we're going to get any kind of feeling for what's going on, isn't it? It's not like you could. It's not something you could actually write a manual for, this kind of behaviour.
Right, but like, look at, I was saying about the four legs of jurisdiction. Yeah, if the court can't, if they can't form the court, yeah. How can they proceed? So it doesn't matter what you're in the court for. There must be a competent witness there. And in 9 times out of 10, there's not. Like, I look at what goes on in the courts. Like, the guards go out and they collect all the fines and they bring them back to the superintendent, and he stands at the front of the car of the court and he prosecutes them. Now, he can't be making a claim because he has no first-hand information. So he's not a competent witness. Yeah, he's not a competent witness. So there's leg one gone, right? So,
and that tells us, doesn't it, that to be a competent witness,
subject matter.
To be a competent witness, you must have first-hand
knowledge.
Yeah, and if there's nobody there who's got that first-hand knowledge, there is no competent witness. So, like you say, that's leg one.
Yeah. So basically, subject matter. So if you haven't recognised the claim, yeah. There's no subject matter either. Like, if he says, oh, he had no driver's license and you just ask, is it civil or criminal? Yeah? They still haven't got subject matter because you haven't mentioned license. Yeah?
Yeah.
You're there. You're asking something else. Is this a civil or criminal matter? Yeah? And I'm looking for an answer to a different question. But, like, over here we have the advantage. We have another constitution here that can be used as well. Right, it's the 1919 Sovereign Constitution. Basically, Ireland's Independence Day is the 21st of January, 1919. That's when we declared our independence from the Crown of England, by the will of the people of the 1918 election. Right, and that was formed after the 1916 rising here, and was declared on the 21st of January, 1919. There is a constitution that goes with that, and it was set up by the will of the people, and it came to fruition. So it's actually a legal, lawful, bona fide government that existed before it was declared illegal by George V in August of 1919.
He might have declared it illegal, but it still works in a court.
Well, hold on. What is illegal is not unlawful.
No, yeah? Quite.
Okay? Remember, it's lawful because it was there by the will of the people, yeah?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with legal. Yeah, it's a lawful government. So you could go into a court, right? Remember, we have to remember now over there, it's all British accredited registry courts, right? They're all the bar courts, yeah? They're the same over here. And one wonders how we have bar courts here in Ireland if we're supposed to be a republic, you know? and not a de facto country or de facto de jure state of the crown. That's actually what we are over here in Ireland. It's the crown that still runs us. It's de jure, and they have a de facto government in place, right? So I know that's a lot to take in, Dr. Rock. But it brings us to the 1919 Sovereign Constitution. And if you know how to use that, yeah, you can use that in the courts here. And it's back to the four legs of jurisdiction, or the four legs of the court. They have no jurisdiction because all the judges have all taken their oath to the Queen, right? And the bar, and they haven't taken their oath to the sovereign Dáil Éireann courts over here. So that's where you are. You know what I mean? And obviously our sovereign courts are lawful courts. Yeah, there's no acts and statutes and legislation in them. They're just lawful courts. That's it.
Have you got sovereign lawful courts in Ara?
Well, Susan Denham, the Chief Justice, has been appointed to the office of the Sovereign Courts right now. In other words, they've pointed at the office of the Sovereign Court and they says, oh, Susan Denham, there's the office. But she hasn't taken up that office, right?
I'm interested because I hear that...
That'd be treason. She cannot take it up. Right. She swore an oath to the Queen, yeah?
Okay. And you need a man or woman who hasn't done that, do you?
Yeah, the Queen is the head of the bar, yeah?
Right.
Right, the Queen is the head of the bar, right, the Crown. The Crown is the bar and the Queen is the head of the bar, now only in name or in title. Yeah, she's fuck all use apart from that, but she does hold the covenant with God, right, where she swears, she holds the Torah in her hand, yeah, she swears upon it, then she picks it up and she kisses the Bible. All that I have swore, all that is in here I swear to uphold. It's the first five books of the Bible, it's the Torah. And in there in Deuteronomy it says that you shall not add or take away from the wording of this book, right? And basically, she holds it in her hand, she swears it, she kisses the Bible and signs the contract. That's the covenant with God, yeah? And she is now the head of the bar, right? But the first thing that she actually does then is she goes down the road and into the parliament and she signs acts and legislations into law and actually breaks her oath with God, or her covenant with God.
Because that's not God's law.
Yeah, it's not. How can it be God's law? Yeah, if it's an act, if it's man-made, it can't be.
So, what do you think then? How do you? It seems seems to me, as we get into what is known as the year 2017, that we're starting to make some sort of progress. The way I like to put it is that we seem to have spent a lot of years trying to keep the buggers out of our penalty area, but it seems to me that we're getting past the midfield now. How do you see 2017 going for us?
Well, look, it's very difficult because people are very indoctrinated. Yeah, and I mean, it's very difficult because people are indoctrinated. They think that legislation is law. It's not. Okay? Just get that one in your head first. Legislation is not law. Yeah? So that's the first thing you have to understand. So some guy saying it's an act of statute and you have to do this and you have to do that. If it's only an act of legislation, an act is a corporation tax. That's what it means. Yeah? Act. A corporation tax. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
And,
a statue is just a statue. It's a scary monster standing somewhere. All you have to do is walk by him. Yeah, yeah. He can't hurt you.
Yeah, we heard Paul Diab, who was a law professor, being interviewed by Mark Stevens a few weeks back on a podcast. And this law professor was cornered by Mark Stevens into saying the laws only apply to you because we say they do.
Yeah. So who gave them that right to say that? Yeah.
There you go.
Now, okay, this all mingles in together, Dr. Rock. It all mingles in with knowing how to be a man, yeah? And knowing, you know, but no, not recognizing, oh, but you're, I'm the law around here. A policeman stands in front of you. I'm a police officer. Yeah, but a police officer is the military. You see, he works for the office. He's of the office, you know what I mean? He's an officer, yeah? And officers enforce rules and regulations. Yeah, so you're always looking for a constable of the peace, right? We have Garda Síochána, which means Garda Síochána, guardians of the peace. Over there, you have constables of the peace, and that's always what you're looking for. You know, you're always looking for the constable. You're not looking for the police officer because he'll just trample all over you. Yeah,
yeah.
He has no oath. He can do what he likes. He didn't swear anything to you. He swore to uphold the laws of the office, the company, the crown, yeah? And to tax you and to throw you in jail. That's what the officer swore, but the constable swore to serve and protect the people.
The officer is basically licensed to deceive and take money off you.
That's basically the difference, yeah? Whereas I called him over here, we have Garda Síochána. He swore to serve the people, yeah, and protect the people, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you have the police enforcement officer. They're called, they actually have Garda on one side of their jacket and police on the other. He's a police enforcement officer and he's doubling as a Garda and a warrant server and this. But most of the work that he's doing is in a civil role. Yeah. And he's trying to deceive and trap people with acts and legislation, like driving down the road with, say, a bald tire. Oh, it's an offence to do this. Yeah. It's a criminal offence to drive a car with a baldy tire.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Did anybody, it would be a criminal offence if that tyre blew out and the car went across the road and you ran into somebody and knocked them down. Now it's a criminal offence, yeah?
Yeah.
Because you've caused the loss or harm or damage, yeah? But if you just have the baldy tyre on your car, who's suffering the loss, harm or damage because of it, yeah?
Yeah.
Nobody, yeah? Now he could caution you and tell you and advise you to change it, but like that'd be something that you should be doing in your own interest anyway, you know.
So yes.
You know, that's basically what it is. It's very simple once you break it down, but an awful lot of it is down to knowing how to stand as a man as well, you know. But the question everybody should be asking when they're being brought into court for parking fines, illegal dumping, road traffic offences, anything like that, yeah? Breach of the peace, any of that stuff where they haven't, when I say breach of the peace, where they haven't hit or assaulted anybody, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Or shouting or anything like that. Yeah. Civil or criminal, yeah?
Yeah, every time.
First question. But like, if you ask the question, you need to know what the answer is going to be. So they'll give you one of two answers. They'll say it's civil, yeah? I recall signing no such contract. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they say it's civil. Yeah. So that doesn't mean there might be a contract you just don't remember, but you don't recall it. So now they must provide that contract. So I recall signing no such contract. Please provide the actual blue ink contract.
Yeah.
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 That I have with you. Yeah.
I like, please provide the actual contract. I think that's great.
Yeah, so they can't produce that because you know you didn't sign one, right? And then the other one is, oh, it's criminal. Oh, right. So who's making the claim? Okay, so what is it, what man or woman is making the claim? Present the injured man or woman that makes the claim. Make sure you mention the word man or woman, yeah? Because if you say, well, over here we can get away with it, they might say the state, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, over here I would say which state. Over there you could probably say which state as well, because you have a load of states as well. Like you have the, you have Great Britain, you have the UK, you have England, Wales, Scotland, and I'm sure there's many more registered corporate businesses in there pretending they're companies, countries.
Yeah, buried, you know, buried within.
Buried within, yeah. So, like, I'm claiming to be a state. Is it the state of Westminster that makes the claim? Or is it the rest of England? Or is it the whole of Britain? Or, you know, so basically, if this, you shouldn't make that mistake, though. You should always ask what man or woman makes the claim if they say it's criminal. Right? Because then somebody has to go and make a claim of loss, harm, or damage. And they can't.
So, really, we're in all sorts of circumstances, this is really going to save a lot of grief knowing how to do this. And I one of my other guests said, just really free-flowing conversation, and she said, I thought really observantly, she said, the quality of your life will be directly dependent upon the quality of the questions you ask.
Absolutely. If you ask the wrong question or you submit to the, like if you answer something, you see, this is the other thing, right? The judge might turn around to you and he might say, oh, hello, Mr. Hall, and have you even acknowledge that, yeah?
Yeah.
Just giving him subject matter jurisdiction, yeah?
That's what I mean about it being really difficult.
It is, like, really, I seen Paul do it, and basically what Paul done when he stepped forward was he asked, is this case number, la, 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 yeah? And they said, yes. And he says, oh, I'm the man, Paul Coddington, and I present myself. I don't represent myself, I present myself.
One of the things I was wondering, it occurred to me whilst we were going through and I forgot, now I've remembered again, is that one of the things you can do when you turn up on one of these courts is limit your liabilities, isn't it? So that you don't take too... Why didn't Paul do that? How come he ended up doing all
He didn't... Well, first of all, they haven't told him whether it's civil or criminal. More or less, look at the way he's doing things. It's I don't really want to talk about his court case too much, but like they're struggling to get jurisdiction.
Really? Really, you do surprise me.
They're struggling to get jurisdiction, right?
Yeah.
So they're bringing him back again for another contract later on next month. But, yeah, they're struggling to get jurisdiction there, and they're using all sorts of excuses, but that's because of what I said to you about the many constitutions that we have, yeah?
Well, I really look forward to hearing how it's all going on, and I'm really grateful to both of you coming on. We will have Cotty on to talk, give us a first-hand account of that Christmas encounter with the men with guns, because I think it's really important to get that out there. Like I say, because it's the first time, I'm horrified to think that somebody I know to be a gentle, practical human being just has their house invaded, you know, so we'll get him on. But it's really great to have you on the habeas corpus thing. Really like to keep up with what's going on there if you want to stay in touch. But do you want to say a bit about coup d'etat media?
Well, coup d'etat media, okay, look, we're doing a little talk on Sunday night. It's not really me that's doing, I was asked to do a little bit at the end, but coup d'etat media is something that we set up with the view to maybe to raising people's awareness, yeah, as to some of the solutions that's out there. Like, basically over here in Drogheda this weekend, Saturday is being Ireland's Independence Day, January 21st. On the 22nd, in McHugh's Pub in Drogheda, there's a little talk, and basically one of them will be about fluoride, because they put fluoride in our water over here, and it's killing us. It actually causes Alzheimer's and all sorts of problems to the body. And another man will be talking about the dangers of vaccinations. And basically, because I'm from coup d'etat media, I will be having a little chat about the Sovereign Republic of ERA, something that it's a solution that's out there, and they're all going to actually walk by the solution to most of it. They're going to stomp by roaring and shouting and protesting on Saturday the actual solution to most of our problems, which is the first sovereign doll that was created in 1919. Declared in 1919, it was actually proclaimed on the 24th of April, 1916.
And it's really an example to us all, I suspect. So, you know, it's, and I know I'm aware that that particular constitution has been used in a number of applications in court, but I'm aware that it's in a way it's in written form, but it's a right that comes to us all if we choose to assert it.
Well, look, at the 1919 Constitution is about the assets of the state and everything belonging to the people, but it's also, 1916 was about sovereignty, yeah? And it was about us placing ourselves as equals with the Queen or the King of the day. Basically, that's every man is born, every child is born sovereign. They are entitled to the equity of the earth. They are born free. They are not a taxable commodity, and they're not a corporation. They are a living being. They were born into existence.
Yeah, yeah. As ultimately is the Queen and everybody else, they're all the same.
We're all born the same, and no man can tell another man what to do. It's that simple. You know what I mean? We all stand next to God, God's kingdom.
I love the obviously the obverse of that. One of my favourite legal maxims is he who fails to assert his rights has none.
Well, that's a very good way of putting it. Normally, what I would say to somebody when I'm accused of being a legal fiction is, I am a sovereign flesh and blood man standing in God's kingdom. Who's claiming I'm a corporation?
Yes. We should, one of these days, we should come up with a calendar, you know, with 365 excellent questions.
Well, there is quite a good few questions out there. Like, there's many, many, many questions. Oh, I say you're the name. Oh, really? Can you say I'm that name? Yes. Well, can you ask it a question and see if it answers?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's not me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I say it's you. Well, I'm a man. How can I be a name?
No, I'm me. You're you. Who's you?
Yeah, well, like, I'm a man. How can I be a name? Yeah. And, like, even when they say, like, you're allowed to use that name if you want to. Like, because remember, man owns nothing, only his stomach. Man owns his belly. Yeah, and he owns his body. That's it. But man owns nothing, but he can use everything.
Yes. Yeah. And as I've written...
The fiction owns everything. If you think about it, look at your bank card is a fiction. Your social welfare is a fiction. Your driver's license is a fiction. Your TV license is a fiction. Your mortgage, the fiction owns it.
Do you know, I only really kind of grokked today that loads of us have recognised for a long time that you can't actually own anything. You can't actually say own land or anything because, like, when you go, you lose it. But it seems that there's a huge kind of gap between recognising that we can't own anything and actually then subsequently pretending to have title to all sorts of stuff. It's kind of like a real serious schizophrenia, it seems to me, that's in the Western mind. And
yeah, but here's something interesting that I learned only the other day. Well, I learned a few weeks ago because I was teasing. I was ringing up, making them awkward phone calls. And I rang the birth certificate office because I do it now and again. I was acting the mick. And basically I was saying to them, I says, oh, I was saying that I'm the existence and that I'm the authorised representative of the dead fiction and I wanted to cash in me estate, right? And when I rang the birth certs office, I got sent around the country through the courts and everything, and they didn't know how to deal with the questions I was asking. So they sent me down to the birth certs office down in Sligo. And a woman says, she says, what's your name? And I says, I don't have a name. And she said, she was wide enough to this one. She's probably one of the old women that sits in these dungeons, knows all about everything. And she goes, okay, so what do people call you? And I says, they call me Ray. And she says, and do you have a family name? And I says, I have two. And she says, oh, your mother's and your father's. Well, you can use either, she says. So I'm putting that into practice now. I often use my mother's name when I might apply for something. But that name doesn't have a social security number. It doesn't have anything.
Great. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, again.
It's not against, you can look at the actual, you can only actually prove your paternity through your mother anyway, so at birth. You know what I mean? Because without doing blood tests and everything like that, nobody knows who the father is. Or people would say, oh, well, he looks like his father. Yeah, did his father have brothers?
Yeah. And that's really a subject all of its own, because the fact that we can trace paternity is, or and the fact that we can and that we do is actually almost as key to our current challenges as the money.
Yeah. So the people are the currency. Yeah. You've got to get into that. And they need you to claim to be this corporation so that they can tax you and they can. But if you don't claim to be the corporation and you only use the corporation when you need to, like, say you're unemployed, well, I'm the existence and the person, which is the name. Yeah. Exists because the existence exists, so they have to feed the person to keep the existence alive, right? So the person is entitled to go down and get social welfare, yeah?
Yeah.
To keep the person alive, but they don't give a shit about the existence, but the existence was there first, and without the existence, there's no person, but you can have the existence and not have a person, and I tend to use my mother's maiden name when I want to do things like that now, you know?
Yeah. It has to be said, I think, that this, you know, by and large, I'm much happier playing the game this way than just being patronised by idiots and doing nothing.
Well, look, I'm up to my neck in it in the courts, and I've unfortunately got dragged into their legal washing machine, right? So I'm trying to find my way out of that, and it's quite difficult, and I can see myself going all the way to the European courts, for due process that I didn't get that day we described in Trim.
So this is over the repossession order for your dwelling.
Now here we are 2 years later, and we're in the Court of Appeal now, the second highest court in the land. And the guys that got the possession order are saying that the judge was perfectly right and honourable in what she'd done. And I'm saying, no, she didn't. She took away my equity. The moment that those agents of the state attacked Paul and took my paperwork, I was caused loss, harm or damage.
That,
yeah?
I mean, I'd find that, you know, I'd listened to your podcast and stuff, but I'd somehow missed that detail. I am really, really shocked at what happened there, and that you're still fighting the corner on it.
Yeah, I'm still fighting the corner on that. But it's not, look, it really is all bullshit anyway, because I'm still sitting here in my dwelling, yeah? And there's no man that's going to come with a piece of paper and put me out of that dwelling.
No. So when's your next appeal then? When do you get to hear another hearing in another court?
Well, I have to have paperwork in by the 30th of this month. I'm right deep into the legal washing machine at this stage, and I'm struggling at this stage to do. But I do have the beating of these guys. I just have to get the court to listen to me and to understand, yeah? But what I found is one judge pretended to listen to me, and he actually gave me grace to go forward, or gave me leave to go forward to take the appeal. And then we were brought into one of these bogey courts with no seals or anything above the judge's head, and I wasn't listened to, right? And it was upheld, they upheld the decision of the Trim Court. And I went, yeah, how could that be so? I had no equity, yeah? My equity was taken when they took Paul. He was my equity, yeah?
Yes, yeah, indeed. And what are they doing moving you into courts with no...
Look, it's the game. Look, I should have objected and said I wasn't having it aired that day. Look, I went in there. If I'd known the judge was going to be such a bitch, I would have, yeah? Right, I was deliberately contracting going in there, yeah, because it was me that was bringing it. And it is still me that brings the case, yeah?
And that actually, something I discovered a couple of years back with some friends of ours were moved against by the Department of Environmental Health and several other government agencies of one sort or another, and the lady of the house was so outraged that she stormed down the local magistrate's court and made a complaint, basically, and it all ended up going her way. They had a hearing, these people turned up, and the magistrate said, you know, what, just exactly which law is it that you're trying to do this lady under? And they said they didn't know. So the magistrate told them to piss off and not come back till they could. And basically, they've not had any trouble since then, which suggests to me that the person that actually, the individual, the man or woman who goes and tries to use the system can actually end up on top.
Yeah, well, there's another thing out there, like if you knew you were going to court, now you're going down, I don't know what you'd have in there, I don't know what they're called. We have a district court, it's the first one. That you have the small claims court, then you have the district court, is where you were brought to be tried for a crime, yeah?
Yeah.
So, now a district court judge is not really a proper judge, right? He's only an administrator, right? He's not. He has sworn an oath, I think, yeah? But God knows what he swore and
who to?
And who to, yeah. I swear to keep me pockets full, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, but you should probably, if you were going to be going in front of him, look, at you could send him a writ of quo warranto, yeah? And that's a writ that you would send to a judge and asking him where he, a man, is getting jurisdiction over you, a man. Right?
Yeah.
And most judges won't deal with the case after that.
Yeah, because yep. you're trying to land liability pretty permanently in their hands that way, aren't you?
Basically, yeah. Basically, what you're telling the judge that you're a man, yeah, and you're asking the other man, if he's a man or a woman, where are they getting jurisdiction over you, yeah? Why do you have to do what they say? You don't. You know what I mean? You don't have to do anything. The judge is there to be an umpire, but most of them aren't. They work for the organisation that's extracting the money from you, you know?
And that's really what it all boils down to, isn't it? And it does seem that we're identifying these questions that we can ask them that really really mean they get their knickers in a twist, which is great. It's a bit like it's some magic spells that really work. I think another point about it is that in a difficult situation, if all you've got to do is remember half a dozen questions or so and maybe be ready to come up with one or two new ones occasionally, then you're going to find it a lot easier to deal with the situation than otherwise.
Well, in all fairness, there's only a few questions there because they're going to get stuck real quick if you stick to your guns,
yes.
Right? Civil or criminal. So say they eventually answer it. Oh, it's criminal. Oh, what man or woman brings the claim? Have they got one? Well, if it's an act of legislation they're relying on, they haven't got one,
yeah.
Right?
So right. All they're going to do by solving one simple question, should they do that, which does seem to take them a remarkably long time, all they're going to get is another question.
Yeah, so should they say it's civil? You might say, oh, it's civil. I'll be accepting no fines, fees, penalties or jail time. And I recall signing no such contract.
Okay, that's where that little bit comes in.
The actual contract, yeah?
Okay, so it's only the bit about limiting your liabilities only comes, the civil or criminal is absolutely...
Anytime, yeah? But like, if you're in there limiting your liabilities, you've given jurisdiction or you've submitted to something, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've submitted to something. If you've already agreed, then that they must have jurisdiction. If you're in there trying to limit their liabilities, yeah.
Yep. But
yeah.
If they've already answered civil.
Well, civil needs consent. You know what I mean. So it needs a written contract. You know what I mean. They might produce your social welfare card and claim jurisdiction.
Might they? Have they ever done that?
Well, they do that, yeah. They do. Yeah. Oh, we found this driver's license on him. I say that's him.
Oh, yeah? Okay, right, yeah, yeah.
Now they have the piece of paper, yeah? So if they search you when they open your wallet, even if it's a lawful or unlawful, right, and they search you and they find a driver's license or they find a bank card or they find a social welfare card or they find a telephone number that's registered to your name, yeah? They'll use that too, yeah? They find anything that's registered to that fiction, they'll use it, right?
Right. Now, I thought the reason why I was so shocked was I thought that they might actually have somewhere the original National Health Card and actually kind of pull it out and go, here you go, you signed this when you were 16, mate.
Look, if they can find something on you that'll link you to the piece of paper, because I had a conversation like, okay, I was stopped, and that's what the summons is through my door, where at Christmas I was stopped last summer, and he was looking for my license, yeah? And I knew if I showed him the license that I was admitting to be the piece of paper. So I just said I hadn't got it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right? And basically, he pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. But like, he eventually got me through the registration of the car.
Yeah. Just as a matter of interest, several people we know actually having a bit of a batting session with motor car insurers, because one of the things they seem to be doing now is asking everybody to send photocopies of both sides of the driving license and various other documentation. But I'm aware that, as you've just outlined, were I to be stopped and somebody was to tap on my window, they might find it quite difficult to get me to show them my license, and I know that I'm not obliged really so to do. So I'm thinking about the insurance companies and wondering how come it is that they're apparently obliging people to provide.
We'll go back to the contract, okay? There's no meeting of the minds. If you're not going to be that person, that legal fiction that's been created for you, right? So, okay, my name is Ray Hall. The name on most of these cards is going to be Raymond Hall, okay? But, like, remember, I didn't choose that name. My mother named me Raymond, yeah? Yeah. And my father's family name is Hall, right? There's no proof. But, like, basically, the government came along when they done the live birth. When it came to the birth cert, they registered my mother, the name my mother gave me, and the name my father, and they formed them two names together, yeah?
Yeah.
And they copyrighted it. So they own it, yeah? And they own all the liabilities for it. Now, that is the legal fiction. That is the birth cert. That's why when you go down to sign on for the social welfare, for instance, yeah? They'll say, oh, bring your birth cert with you. So they'll say your birth cert. In other words, they want you to claim it. In other words, you're claiming to be the dead entity. That's why it'll say on the birth cert, this is not for this is not to be used for identification.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you go down to the social welfare, they tell you to bring your birth cert with you, to have your PPS number. But you don't own any of them. They're not yours. The legal fiction owns them. You own jack shit. If you're a man, you own jack shit. You own nothing. You own your life. That's what you own. Mm. Yeah?
And wouldn't it be a different world if we behaved like that was actually the case? Because I think a lot more, like I say, I think a lot of people know that you can't own anything, but they don't behave as if that's the case. If all the people who understood that, all the people who've apprehended that kind of general suggestion were actually to act on it, even in a little way, we would start seeing the world changing quite quickly, I suspect.
Yeah, well, people have to get used to not, what's your name? Oh, you should look at them blankly when they say, what is your name? Your enemy.
I am known as many things.
Well, what is my name? Well, my children call me daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah? So that's not the answer they're looking for. Because I did say that to the guard that day as well. He says, what's your name? And I says, I'm called many things. He says, so what are you called? I says, well, my children call me daddy. Yeah? Right?
Yeah.
That really infuriated him.
I think, in fact, generally, actually, one of the things I think that we really need to be concentrating on is breaking away from the expected language altogether. Because, again, I was looking at a car insurance form and looking at the list of occupations that you can have. And I was thinking, well, you know, actually, if I was having to fill this form in, none of those actually apply to me. So what would I do? So I now describe myself as, if I'm asked, I describe myself as a various artist. You know,
right.
like the various artists you get on the back of albums, except that I do loads and loads of different things. So,
yeah.
Because as soon as you call yourself a gardener or whatever, you're giving yourself a kind of label.
They're copyrighted words.
That's it. That's it. And I suppose even a various artist is copyrighted words, but they'd find
this and that is good. What do you do? Oh, I do a bit of this. I do a bit of that. Where do you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, I do a bit in the north, in the south, in the east, in the west, all over, really.
I think that's great. I remember Vin saying to me, he came to me in a dream once, and all he said in the dream was, Doc, it's all this, that, and things, he said.
Yes. This, that, the other.
Yeah, this, that, the other, which is another of Paul's points I remember in one of the chats I had with him. He said, you don't want to be talking about even apples and oranges, you just want to be talking about food from the trees.
This and that and things.
Yeah.
What do? You know what I mean? Yeah, so I do a bit of this, I do a bit of that. Yeah. Or as Paul says in there, I work with my hands.
Yeah.
Right, so you're not making any, what sort of work do you do, is the next question that they'll try and contract you with. A bit of this and a bit of that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all about being vague with your answers. And when the judge will give up when he can't contract it. But he needs something to get jurisdiction. And then he might say, oh, do you pay tax when you work? But the question might be, you might be very smart then when you say that. You could be in for something else. And you'd ask the judge out straight, what's that got to do with this?
What's that got to do with this? I love that. Because right. That's the thing. It's not only a matter of being vague. It's a matter of being vague and simple, isn't it? It's not a matter of being vague and complicated.
And being assertive when you have to be. So if he's trying to lead you down the garden path and he asks you a ridiculous question, yeah, that has nothing to do with why you're there before that court. Your answer should be, what's that got to do with this?
Yeah.
Yeah? And that, it's very, very, very simple. But, it's not so easy when you're standing there. Another great answer, as Paul puts in, is that's private. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that is an absolutely doozy of a question or an answer, because they hate it. They come to my door now, and the Gardaí know when they come to my door that they're going to get put on their oath. They're going to get held to their oath of office. They know it before. So they generally now, they tiptoe in and out at night if they want to give me something. drop it through the letterbox, yeah? Because they don't like being, but they, like, basically, the first, they know the first question I'll ask them when I see them is, who are you? So they always go, oh, are you Ray? And I've stayed taken to answering that question with, that's private. And basically, any question that they ask me and they don't answer anything for me, I'll just keep replying, that's private. Or I don't answer questions.
Yeah.
You, I'll just keep asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, and when I have the answers to all the questions that I want, well then, or I have all the information, well then I might, you know what I mean? But I'll never get them answers because they can't answer.
No, indeed. I love them, and there's so many of them. It's still one of my favourites is, are you accepting liability in your private capacity for the claims you're making here today?
Yeah, well, they'll get upset with that, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. They will get upset with that. But there is, you can be a real smart arse as well, like, and they'll say, oh, where do you live? And I've heard lads saying, in my body, and where are we now?
Yeah.
Everywhere I go. Yeah.
I like under my hat.
Well, yeah, well, that's another good one, yeah. So basically, there's loads of smart arse answers, but like some of them smart arse answers do infuriate them.
Does Patrick in the chat box is saying, could we say feck off nosy?
Well, you know what I mean? They could interpret feck to be fuck off, you know what I mean?
They could, then you're in trouble, aren't you?
Yeah, well, then you're being abusive, you know? So the whole idea is to be pleasant, to not get upset, and to answer any questions with a question and don't give any answers to any questions directly, you know. So the answer is, if they ask you a question like, who are you? Who's asking? You know?
Yeah. And I'd say that one of the best places to get practice at that sort of thing is when you encounter trolls, is to answer no questions and keep asking them questions is actually also really effective practice.
It can be, yeah, but like the trolls are sent there to get into your head and annoy you and draw you out and then to try and contradict what they say. So I find it better when the troll arrives to, and I know them to be a troll, I'll just delete their comment, and it's like mostly on social media, I'll delete their comment and they can see it.
Yeah.
Nobody else can see it. Yeah.
indeed. Nice and safe and easy.
Yeah. And that's more or less it. Like the trolls do come, you know. The trolls are there. Look, I'm well followed and well documented. I don't normally block people and I usually befriend most of the people, but now I'm having to be very careful, who I'm befriending, and I've had to block lots.
I think that's probably one of the surest signs that you've got that you're doing something useful.
Oh, well, look at, yes, I know I have their attention. You know what I mean?
It's been a real pleasure having you on. I'd really like to keep up with what you're doing. I'll keep an eye on Coup d'Etat Media and I'll keep listening to your podcasts and things like that. But more power to your elbow, that's what I say. Just keep on batting, mate. You're doing well.
Well, I keep on learning. That's the key.
Yeah.
Keep on, find a situation. Great thing to do is go down to the library and start reading law books. And you don't have to read the whole book, yeah? Just pick out bits in it, flick through it and find, oh, due process, and find out about due process. Oh, find out things that you want to know. Look them up.
So if you were going to consult one law book, which one would it be? Which one should people give a quick hunt for?
They're all good. Yeah. They're
all good, yeah. I tend to agree. I just like the way that, I love the way they're written. They're written carefully, and I hate sloppy prose.
Black's Law Dictionary is quite a good one to look up the meaning of the words.
And
now,
you can get downloadable. I've got I had a Black's Ninth, which was useless. I've now got a downloadable Black's Second, which was, I think, 1920, and it's fabulous. I really love it.
Yeah, now the other thing I was going to say to you about that is, yeah, if you know the meaning of the words, yeah, now you said something earlier about the guys trying out the civil and criminal, and it was deemed, somebody was deemed to be criminal, right?
Yes.
Now, look up the meaning of the word deem.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah? So deem is one of them. Deem is a weasel word. It's like
an opinion, isn't it? It's just an expression of an opinion.
Yeah, it's a weasel word, right? Yeah. So basically, I can pick up the pen here off my desk and I can deem it to be a writing implement, yeah, as pen, right? Or my back is itchy and I could deem it to be a back scratcher and scratch me back with it. Or I could deem it to be a dart here and throw it and see if I can switch off the light, you know? So yeah. there's many things deemed. The meaning of deemed is to deem something, it means it's something that it's not, yeah?
Yes,
That's really the meaning of themed, is something that it's not.
Yeah.
That's so when they say, oh, it's deemed to be criminal, oh, the meaning of themed is something that it's not, so it's not criminal. Yeah?
And that's all that's happening. Everything's being deemed by us and by them. We're deeming everything, and we don't really know that any of it's real, and most of it isn't, it would appear.
Yeah, or, oh, this coffee is being sold as, yeah, Nescafe, yeah? Well, when you see the word as in their writing, you should always say, you should always put the word if after, as if it's Nescafe.
A promissory notice to be treated as cash for accounting purposes.
As if it's cash, as if, everything is as if, and shall, I shall look after that, but you didn't say when. Shall is more, I would say that you will do something sometime in the future. You didn't tell them when you're going to do it sometimes in the future. Yeah. You know, like that's, there's a few real weasel words, like, and like shall could mean so many different things. It can appear in a sentence four or five times and mean a different thing every time it appears.
The way shall is just one of the examples of the way time is actually tied into commercial transactions and oaths. Once you slip out of the present tense, you get this really complex metaphysical state that I've only just discovered in the law. And, God, blimey, it's, I can see why now people have spent time saying you got to keep it in the present.
You got to keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there, look, I've stood in the courts, and Paul has stood in the courts, and I've listened to a judge and a barrister have a conversation. I knew they were speaking some sort of English, yeah? But I didn't understand the word they were saying.
God, serpents in the garden, that's what they are. They're bloody serpents in the garden.
Well, it's all back to the contract, you know what I mean? Like, if we go back to Genesis 1:26, just remember Genesis 1:26, and I'll tell you this story before I go. There's a man, I know him quite well, living up in Cavan, and he was before the court. He didn't have his license, and he didn't have the insurance or tax or things like that. But he brought in the sovereign constitution into the court, right? But, like, he didn't need to bring that because he went in as a man. Right, and he went in, and his name was called out, and the judge called him by Mister, and he says, no, he says, sorry, he knew the judge's name, he says, sorry, Dennis, he says, I'm the man, as described in Genesis 1:26, right, and he went, as described in 1:26, and he gave him a piece of paper with Genesis 1:26, 1:27, and 1:28 on it. Basically, God made man in his image. He made them in his image so that they could rule over the birds in the sky, the fish in the sea, the animals on the land, and everything that crawls. God made them in his image. His image he made them. That's Genesis 1:26 to 1:28. Okay? And the Vatican, you see, came along after that then, you see, and basically they realized, Justinian in 1531, he realized that God didn't give life to man, right? He only gave the existence to man. He gave man existence, the right to existence, yeah? So before you can have life, you must exist, yeah? So when you take the life, you take the life of the contract. The life is for the life of the contract. So people saying you have a right to life, you have a right to existence. I don't believe you have a right to life, because life means life of the contract, usually 70 years.
Oh, that's a good one. There's one from Nick in the chat box as well, which says, if you're deemed to be a criminal, you must not be a criminal, or they wouldn't need to deem. If they deem you a criminal, say thank you for the confirmation of not being a criminal in fact.
That is a fact.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks, Nick. I think we'll call it quits on that one, shall we? Ray, I'll play some tunes up till sort of midnight or so.
Doc, it's been a pleasure coming on and speaking with you. You're a great host. You're one of the best hosts that I've been on with in a while. And apart from the other buddy that's listening in there across the wire, yeah. Ooh. And we do, like, basically, happy to come back on and chat about some of this stuff sometime. Maybe when I finish myself in the courts, I'll come back and talk to you.
Brilliant. That's great. And in the meantime, I'll keep listening to your pods, because they're always real crackers.
Right. No bother, Dr. Rock. I'll talk to you. And thanks to all the listeners in there. And see you all again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks for being here, Ray. We'll see you shortly, mate. Keep it up.
Night-night. God bless.
Cheers, dude. There you go. So that was Paul Cotty earlier on, and we will arrange to get him close to a better internet connection, and so that we can hear that story, because the thing I like about it, we get the impression, do we not, and with good reason, that the whole thing is very, very complicated, when in fact, when we look at it, it's actually quite simple what needs to be done. And I'm sure, as we heard Ray saying several times there, and as I'm sure we'd heard Paul emphasising it, it's ever so easy, through a nod or a wink or a smile in the wrong place, or turning round when somebody calls what you think is your name, to kind of cede jurisdiction. And one of the things that's come across, not just talking to Paul, but talking to Rob Freeman about when he was kind of playing the system and it was therefore necessary for him to spend time in their custody and things like that, that having an approach, having some questions you can ask, having an intent for your being there and knowing that, you know, it's going to last as long as it lasts, but eventually you'll be able to get out and act on whatever it is that you've done, has got to be better than just being drug in and given a really hard time. And I don't know, I'm really looking forward to hearing from Paul kind of when we can organise that. So thanks a lot, Paul, for coming on. Sorry that Mr. Skype wasn't cooperative. Sometimes he's not, you know, when we've got people on that are saying difficult things. But it was really great to hear from the pair of you. So I'm going to play some tunes. I'll play two or three tunes in a row now. This one is one of those things that they're doing to a lot of people, really. It's track probably from 1972, maybe. It's called One Way Hotel, and it's by Slade. And the old psychiatric thing is what they're pulling on a load of people nowadays. And this track must be, it's over 40 years old now. And then there'll be a couple of others, a bit of Stranglers, a bit of Status Quo, and I'll probably come back to you.
Dr. Rock's Radio Show on AutonomousMedia.net. Alternative views, alternative tunes. Thursday nights at 9.
Off that little run with One Way Hotel from Slade. They asked me to sign with a pen on a line. I was done for. 2 minutes and 20 seconds. A very sad story, that one. After that, the Stranglers, Get a Grip on Yourself, on the basis that if you don't get a grip on yourself, some other fecker will get a grip on you. And then Status Quo and Break the Rules off Quo, one of their very old albums, that one from the archives. I was going to do this earlier on, but I forgot about it. I'm just trying to navigate my way to the host chat room. Well, hopefully, there we go. Yeah. So we've got a host of hosts forming on autonomousmedia.net. We've got Unique Lee on Monday evenings, I think from 9 o'clock, and there's always some tunes running up to that. Wednesday evening, I think from 8, we have Raconteurs News. Always a favourite. Loads of great stuff going on there. And I know that Synchro really enjoys it as well, as do I. Cracking shows. Wednesday, not a lot going on here too far. Thursday night is Dr. Rock's Radio Show. Of course, what you are listening to at this very moment in time. Friday nights from 9 o'clock, we have Freeman Jack's Golden Submarine voyaging out there beyond the realms of anybody else's minds at all. And he's preceded by Kenno playing tunes, warming up your neural passages for Jack. And we've got two new shows starting next week. So we've got Aid Hardy. He's going to be presenting Raconteurs 2, which is T00. It's a nice pun there. 7 till 9. Then after RN on Tuesday, Monday, 7 till 9. Okay, so running up to Unique Lee's Dark Side of the Room, we're going to have Raconteurs 2 with Aid Hardy, who observant listeners will have spotted standing in for Andy in a show a couple of weeks ago, and he poked his nose in on Raconteurs News this week as well, and is great. Has to be said, that lady you were interviewing this Tuesday as well was really cracking, folks. I think we should try and get her a slot, because she was as good at asking the questions as she was at answering them. A really, really cracking show. So we're going to have a new one then, Mondays before Unique Lee's Dark Side of the Room, and then after Raconteurs News, Tuesdays at 10, Not Dr. Tamara and Tina will be bringing us the happy hour. Okay, so that's after. So we're starting to fill the schedule. That's really great. And it's really great to have another Not Doctor on, because, of course, although I'm known as Dr. Rock, you know, you can trust me because I'm not actually a doctor. So you are listening to Dr. Rock's radio show. It is only supposed to run through till 11 o'clock or so, but we're going to play a few more tunes. And we'll kick off with Ignorance, Arrogance and Greed from Show of Hands, because I'm pretty sure that was what was shown. You know, how the hell? There was Paul Cotty sitting in a court with all the papers, hoping to help his mate out, and he was just kind of apparently nicked, beat himself up, stripped himself naked, ended up doing a week and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely bloody shameful. Ignorance, Arrogance and Greed. What else can you bloody say, eh, folks? We're paying for this.
All I wanted was a home and a roof over our head, somewhere we could call our own, feel safer in our bed. There was a storm of money raining.
And after Ignorance, Arrogance and Greed, we had a slightly more honest editorial comment with Cunt from Memento Mori by Global Parasite. For some reason, I just felt like playing that. Actually, I don't play enough of them, and I'm going to play a few more, because there's lots and lots of great things. I'd forgotten about them, actually. Sorry about that, Matt. But and then Holidays in the Sun, and as Mahatma put in there, Lydon was a rent boy at the House of Commons, which is fair enough, but also they did make a really handsome racket, didn't they? Anyway, here we go. We're coming up to the end of another show. You have been listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on autonomousmedia.net, Alternative Views, and occasionally Alternative Tunes. I will, if all goes according to plan, be back next week. We're going to have the marvellous Stella Berg back, the radical herbalist, homeopath and lands right activist. And me and Stella are going to try and do a Reasons to be Cheerful show, because we think there's quite a lot of things that we can do that with. We're going to hopefully be talking with some of Paul Cotty's offspring as well about their media studies and about what they understand about what their dad's doing and all that, and the documentaries they're planning on making. That'll be really exciting, I reckon. In the meantime, we're going to play out with Clutch and X-ray vision.
Sergeant Butterman, Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.